This is episode 409 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, November the 5th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, are we being too judgmental too soon on Microsoft's new operating system, Windows 8? Adam Turner has some thoughts on this. Is Telstra up to its old tricks again? Last week, the telco upped the ante in its fight to stop naked DSL being mandated as a wholesale service, turning to projected system costs and interference investigation data to dissuade the competition watchdog. Qantas has deployed an Optus Wi-Fi service in 40 frequent flyer lounges across the country, replacing a Telstra network that travellers previously found unreliable. In the aftermath of Sandy last week, data centres in that part of the US are problematic, with power supply and flooding issues. And as we mentioned last week, Kim.com, the founder of the shuttered file-sharing site Mega Upload, announced a new online storage service called Mega that will give users direct control and responsibility over their files. And a UK Court of Appeal has rapped Apple's knuckles for failing to comply with a court order, requiring the company to post on its website a simple statement saying Samsung had not copied its iPad designs. Don't forget there's the usual OddSpot gadget app and website of the week. And first up, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Vodafone to axe 500 jobs, changes to mobile phone laws in New South Wales, webcams provide a unique insight into Hurricane Sandy, Google announces a new Android lineup, and an astronomer wins the Prime Minister's Science Prize. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Beleaguered telco Vodafone has announced plans to shed 500 jobs, including contractors, marketing staff and customer service officers. The layoffs are expected to take place by the end of November, and Vodafone's chief executive officer, Mr. Bill Morrow, said it was vital that the telco simplified business to be efficient and to enable growth in the long term. High-level corporate positions are not exempt from the restructure. Long-time Chief Financial Officer Mr. David Borman is leaving after 14 years and being replaced by Vodafone New Zealand CFO Mr. James Marsh. Other key appointments include Mr. Cliff Wu as Chief Technology Officer and Mr. Brad Whitcomb in the newly created role of Director of Strategy, Transformation and Business Development. Vodafone has struggled over the last year and a half with network problems and a mass exodus of customers. The ABC's finance reporter Mr. David Taylor on ABC PM last week.
The new CEO came in early this year and basically said he wanted to undertake a business review because Vodafone's lost around 600,000 customers since late 2010. And part of that has been obviously that they're going to cut their staff. Interestingly enough, though, complaints to the ombudsman from Vodafone customers have dropped from 14,000 in early 2011 to around half that this mid this year.
Vodafone says it's still on track to commission its own 4G LTE network early next year. The New South Wales government has changed laws relating to the use of mobile telephones in motor vehicles. The Department of Transport, Roads and Maritime Services says from the 1st of November, while the vehicle is moving or stationary, drivers can only use a mobile phone to make or receive a call if the phone is secured in a fixed mounting or if the phone does not require the driver to touch or manipulate the phone in any way. Texting, video messaging, online chatting, previewing messages and emailing are now all strictly prohibited. GPS functions in a mobile phone can only be used if the phone is secured or mounted somewhere that won't distract the driver or obscure their vision and doesn't affect proper operation of the vehicle. Learner and P1 drivers are not permitted to use a mobile phone at all while driving. In a statement, New South Wales Police said the new laws make it clear that a driver cannot hold a phone in his or her hand other than to pass it to a passenger. The United States Eastern Seaboard was under siege last week by Hurricane Sandy, a tropical cyclone that caused widespread destruction across the Caribbean, mid-Atlantic and northeastern states. Some of the most amazing views of the storm were captured by public and private webcams, as well as security cameras from Virginia Beach, Virginia, right down to Coney Island in Brooklyn, New York. Updated images of the storm and its path of destruction were posted on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and Tumblr, wherever people had access to power and internet. Audio streaming sites were also popular, with scanner feeds of police and fire department radio traffic logging thousands of connections from around the world. And despite Hurricane Sandy forcing the cancellation of its launch event in New York City, Google has announced a new lineup of Android devices with plenty of time for Christmas shoppers to get excited. Less than a week after Apple launched its iPad mini and Microsoft its new Surface, Google says a new Nexus 10 tablet will soon be available from $469 locally and a new Nexus 4 smartphone from $349. The new Nexus 10 tablet is a larger version of the Nexus 7 and is being manufactured by Samsung. The new Nexus 4 smartphone is being manufactured by LG and will initially run the Android Jelly Bean operating system. An upgrade to the next version of Android, Key Lime Pie, is expected sometime in 2013. Both devices are expected to be available in Australia from the 13th of November. And an astronomer has won $300,000 after being awarded the Prime Minister's Prize for Science. Professor Ken Freeman from the Australian National University established in 1970 that only a very small part of the universe was comprised of visible components like stars and planets, and that the rest was an invisible dark material which later became known as dark matter. On ABC Radio, Professor Freeman said the award was a very exciting recognition of his work over 40 years.
These sort of awards have gone mostly to people who do sciences, perhaps more applied medical sciences, things that actually one can fairly directly feed into the economy, and that's all exceedingly healthy. But it's just very nice to see the recognition for this basic science, which really underpins a lot of things that people do further downstream.
Professor Freeman is now trying to determine the chemical composition of galaxies. Other award recipients include Eric May from the University of Western Australia for his work with liquid natural gas, Michael van der Plug for his work as a science teacher in Tasmania, and Anita Trenworth for her work teaching science in secondary schools. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Shut up. You're making it awkward.
The Americans start to acknowledge this freelancer model because we've had it that way for a while in Australia now.
Andrew, you make television?
No, well, yeah.
Yes. It's clumsy and dangerous to productivity.
Apple's little Android killer has a lot going for it, but it may have missed the mark.
So it takes a lot to get reputation back once it's lost.
And I was going to say that.
What? There's another iPad?
Have you rooted it already?
No.
It was mainly for game makers more than gamers.
How do you know whether you get a good plug-in or not?
The face recognition recognised me with my headphones and my glasses on.
It said that site's infected with malware.
So there's a new iPhone 5 here in the studio.
What do you do?
Minecraft.
Oh, that's it, Graham. It's time to go.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
On Tech Talk Radio.
Hello again. It's time of the week for Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb and Dr. Ron, hello there.
Hello there. Five to go.
You're not counting, are you?
No, no one's counting, but there's only five to go.
It's a bit like that, isn't it?
It is very much like that.
Now, the rural juror isn't in tonight.
The Urban Fervor.
That's the one.
Yeah, she has put in her apologies, but she'll be here next week.
Yeah.
And I won't be here next week. I'm putting in my apologies in advance.
I know.
Good grief.
It's a bit... This is why we can't do the show beyond the end of the year. It's
Everybody's too busy.
Our professional lives are unfortunately doing what professional lives do.
Getting in the way of fun.
Yeah.
It's a bit sad.
Anyway, yes, so anyway, she will be in next week with all of her wonderful news from the gaming world.
Yes.
We will miss her dearly tonight, so if you're a gamer... Stick around till next week.
Now, Lena sends her apologies.
Adam was going to come in off the bench, but unfortunately, his professional antics were also... He was doing things tonight as well.
So. He was. It was a bit short notice for him.
It was. Graham, how are you this evening?
I'm very well, Andrew.
Lovely to see you. It's good.
Likewise.
A couple of us can get here this evening. Oh, it's going to be a bit like the way the show went. Started off as one and then grew to two and grew to many.
That's right.
So what, now we're shrinking again?
Yeah, it's the Alzheimer's of Tech Talk Radio. We're going back to our...
You'll be the only person
the last
here.
Show will be just Andrew on his own.
No, I'll do a pre-record. We'll be done with it.
The second last show will be just Andrew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we are if you would like to come and have a chat to us whilst the show is on air. Yes. Isn't that right, Dr. Ron?
That's correct. We're all logged in there at the moment. Yeah. Come and join HQ Man, Gareth, Yak, Marky Mark, Mountain Wombat, and the panellists, of course.
Yeah, new toys again in the studio tonight.
Yes, there are. This is exciting. We had new toys last week and got new toys this week.
Yes. Sitting here on the bench in front of me is a lovely, big, fat... Well, actually...
It's either an overgrown...
Small, thin...
Or an overgrown smartphone.
Yeah, it's an iPad mini.
It is an iPad mini.
Isn't it mini? Isn't it cute? Isn't it adorable? Isn't it great? I must admit, I didn't know whether 7 inches was going to cut it for me. But let me tell you how useful it is compared to the 4 inches of the phone or the 10 inches of the big one.
Looks like you dropped your iPad in the washing machine.
No, I didn't. It's a lot thinner too, isn't it?
It is quite
thin,
actually.
Thin it is.
It is. It is very thin.
Anyway,
it
feels very insubstantial to hold onto it.
Yeah, it does. It's very thin. Hello, he's taking photos. But
hold it up. We'll get a quick photo up and we'll show everybody.
Let me put something on there that's going to resemble. There we go.
And while
are you going to tweet this, are you?
I am. I am going to tweet this. And while I'm tweeting and doing such things...
I'm impressed that you can tweet, take photos and talk on the radio at the same time, because I'm going to ask you to do Coro in a second.
Look, I'm nothing if not multi-talented. How did you order this? Did you buy it online or did you go into a store or how did you actually... get it? Did you go to the Apple store?
No, just bought it online.
Bought it online?
Said, I'll have one of those, and gave them some details, and they said thank you very much. The cover arrived pretty much instantly, and the device took a week or so to come, because it was scheduled for launch last Friday.
Yes.
And it was delivered last Friday, which is...
Oh, that's impressive. That's good.
Yeah, well, that's what online shopping's all about, isn't it?
Well, not always.
No, that's true. And that's another story. I was on... Hello to everyone listening to me in Adelaide today. I was on ABC Radio.
Oh, on Adelaide 891.
891, my regular afternoon Monday spot. We were talking about online shopping. And people think I have it in for traditional shops, but I don't.
No, we all do, don't we?
No, well, just... I've done my Christmas shopping, you see. It's all done, bar one person. And I did it all online. So, you know, I rest my case. And that was what I was trying to convey to the... to the Adelaideans and to the rural jurors of the South Australia.
Rural jurors. Oh, dear. And so did you... What was the feedback you were getting on ABC Radio? They were in agreement with you?
The texters went mad.
Yeah?
Yeah. I said, look, I like books too, yet I like reading things online as well as, you know, a tangible piece of paper that you can sit on a beach and read. It's very impractical having an iPad mini on a beach, don't you think?
Absolutely. You need a Kindle for that with an e-ink screen.
Wasn't quite what I had in mind.
You're not using the right tool for the job, Andrew.
Oh, dear. But yeah. All right. Moving right along.
Something a Nook would do.
A Nook?
Yeah. That would do.
It's a concept, isn't it? Anyway, so there you go. That's my new... Have you got any new toys this week, Dr. Roy?
No new toys for me. I've got the new HTC that I'm still contending with. I did actually take Graham's advice on board from last week, and I put a real launcher on it.
Oh, well done.
I'm much happier with that than the default Telstra launcher.
So what's a launcher for people who have no idea? What you push the countdown and off it goes?
It's a little bit like the operating environment, the user interface. So it actually launches the applications. And the one that actually comes with the phone from Telstra, it's set up so that the icons are rather large and it's not very versatile. But you can go into the Google Play Store and install a different launcher, which is much more versatile and gives you a lot more screen real estate.
Yes.
It's a lot quicker.
Did you install the same one I did?
I did.
Yeah.
Was it easy to do?
Yeah, very easy. It's just like an application in the Play Store.
Okay, so people can go there and go, I don't like this user interface on my Android device. I'm going to try what Dr. Ron tried. So they would go to the Android store and they would search for?
Nova Launcher.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And Marky Mark in the chat's just said that's his favourite as well. So we've got a consensus here now.
Oh, okay.
That's good.
So we've endorsed a product, have we? The first time we've all consecutively endorsed a product. That's impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, it won't work on your iPad mini, but it does the world of good to Android devices.
I've still got my Android devices at home.
Oh, HQ Man likes Nova as well. Yes, it
Nova plus one. Oh, what are we plus one-ing in the chat now, are we?
We are. The launcher on the Android is equivalent to Explorer.exe on Windows. It's the shell. It's what you... It's what you click on things to launch programs and find stuff.
It's exactly equivalent to Explorer.exe. That's it.
And got and your desktop and all that sort of stuff.
Dr. Ron's tweet just came up on my phone.
Is that what went ding?
Yeah, it was what went ding. if nothing, we're connected here, aren't we?
We are.
All right, must be time for a bit of this.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with the panel. And you better get your act together if you want to, because there's only five left. The same. Emika, via direct email, says, "Hi guys, something I think is worth mentioning is Telstra's continuous misbehaviour. They are constantly finding ways to empty people's wallets."
They're recalcitrants.
This feedback struck a chord with me, actually, and I'll explain why shortly. "For months now, I've had issues with checking my data on my $79 iPhone 2GB data plan, so they've constantly been able to ping me with excess data usage. Every time I call them up about it, they tell me it would be fixed. Next time, I would get a text message when my data goes past 80%. Aside that, I do need to constantly monitor my usage so I don't go over. Now, for the last month, every time I've tried checking my usage, I got an error message telling me the page was under construction or something, and I should try again later. Again, I called up about this issue, and they told me it would be fixed, and I shouldn't worry. I'll get a message when I go over 80%, blah, blah, blah. A new month has started. I got my new bill. But guess what? I'm being charged an extra $398.35 for apparently going over my 2 gigabytes on my phone. Now, I don't know about anyone else, but this is ridiculous. I was not able to monitor my usage throughout the month. I got no SMS notification that I went over, so I don't see how they're expecting me to pay it. I'm yet to call them to resolve this and hope they would have some integrity and acknowledge their mistake, but I just needed to let everyone know to beware of Telstra's misbehaviours."
That is not...
Cheers, Emika.
Yes, that's not the best of things. I must admit, I had a... stop texting me, Dr.
No, not guilty, Your Honour.
Yeah, and I had a recent run-in with the organisation, which involved several minutes on the telephone call to a... Let's just say I don't think I was ringing Australia at this particular point in time to get something changed on my plan, because I was entitled to 2.5 gig and I only had 1.5 gig.
Right.
40 minutes later on hold, they answered the call pretty quick, but the person who was obviously acting on my instructions, because they were so far away on a VoIP line in some country that wasn't Australia.
A tenuous VoIP connection.
I think that obviously they'd struck a problem which they couldn't resolve, so they ended up having to, you know, ring their support centre and deal with it. This is just me reading between the lines. But I just think that's very ordinary when a company puts you on hold for that period of time and they don't, you know, for something so simple. So simple indeed. And yet, then I rang the other day to get them to put on the new mobile voicemail systemy thing that you can get. And the guy did it instantly. "Oh, yeah, there you go. Should be done now." Oh, look. And it went bing and it sort of just happened all within. And he was local. So I think the tyranny of distance is really going to start hurting these large telcos. But I can understand that issue too. You've got to be able to know how you're going with your usage. Otherwise, how can you react?
Well, Emika, I've had almost exactly the same problem. If I go to the usage page on my mobile phone, I do get an error which says something like, "This site is down at the moment. Please try again later."
What phone did Emika have?
He's got a new iPhone.
Emika, make sure you go and pay for an app called Consume. Consume is a wonderful app. I have it on my iPhone here. And it's one of those apps which lets you plug in absolutely everything that everyone you transact with into the one, nearly, let me qualify that, nearly everyone you transact with into the one application. So you can see at a glance your usage. Now, for example, on mine, it works on the iPad, it works on the iPhone, all the Mac gadgets. I've got my mobile, my wife's mobile, the home internet, the work internet, my CityLink account, my mobile broadband hotspot, my Qantas frequent flyers, my Dropbox, my Google Mail, a couple of prepaid phones that I've got all in the one app, and I just scroll up and down and I can see how they're going at the drop of a hat. And that's called Consume, and it's available in the Apple App Store. It's about $2 to buy, the best money you'll spend.
Sounds like that would be worth it. Now, it was an iPhone, not an iPad.
Emika says iPhone.
Yeah. Now, iPad users are even worse off because Telstra will promise to send you a text message when you reach your limit on your iPad if you've got an iPad with mobile broadband in it. But, of course, an iPad has no equipment to be able to read the text messages that are sent to its SIM card, to its number.
No.
So it does you absolutely no good whatsoever.
Mine does.
Does it?
Yeah, I can send texts. I don't know where I can receive them, but I can send them.
No, you're sending through the Apple thing.
Ah, yes, you're right.
Not through
the phone network.
Not through the phone network.
Yeah, that'll be it.
The issue that I had, Emeka, also was that when I started my new account, and I had 2.5 gigabytes a month on my new account, I started off at 100%. I started off at 2.5 gigabytes.
Are you still at 100%?
Yeah, I'm at 111% now. I've just checked it. And I rang them fairly fast and said, this is dumb. This is really, really dumb because your detailed graph says, yesterday I used 20 meg and the day before I used 800 kilobytes and the day before that I started my account. But so this graph says one thing and the bar graph actually says 100%.
Yeah.
And I finally got onto somebody who acknowledged that it was a fault. And they said, oh, I've never seen this before. This is quite odd.
they should get out more often.
Yeah, well, that's right. Should listen to us. I'll make a note of it. You will be billed the excess data, but a credit will be put on your next account that cancels that out.
Maybe they work for Vodafone. They don't have customers.
Oh, dear.
What Emeka needs to do, though, is to contact Telstra because he says he hasn't done that yet. So contact Telstra, make your case calmly about the fact that you couldn't check your usage and you didn't get your text message warning. And if they don't then offer to fix it for you, and you might not want it, they might offer to meet you halfway or something. And if it's their fault, they should take responsibility for the whole lot. So if they don't satisfy you when you ring them up, then the TIO would be your next stop.
Can I read this news article? But
you must give them an opportunity to fix it first before you go to the TIO.
Go ahead.
This was in the mainstream news this week. Telstra is looking to data traffic growth and increase data prices as a means of arresting revenue decline in a contracting mobile market. Mm. According to a Telstra spokesperson, we are sending pricing signals to customers to help manage this finite resources. Anyway, it goes on, but he attributed...
That's code for charging an arm and a leg for data and reducing everybody's data caps.
Yeah, but at least he came out and said it's Apple that's hurting them because we're all now using data through the Apple network, like you were just saying, Graham, where you send a tweet or text or whatever, not tweet, but a text or a message to another Apple user, and it doesn't go through the telco system. It goes through the Apple way, and that's what they're missing out on, and that's where he attributed to the rise to the what they call OTT, over-the-top apps, such as Apple's iMessage and popular WhatsApp. So they're missing out on the SMS data. They're missing out on the ka-ching as it goes through the normal mobile phone network for SMSs.
You worked out what the cost was once upon a time.
You did.
Didn't you? Like the data cost of a text message if you actually...
Oh, yes, because you only get to send 160 characters and you got charged...
25 cents or...
Yes. And it was a very large number of...
Like $48,000
per megabyte or something, yeah.
GD, via the Tech Talk Radio contact form, says, dear TTRers, do you know if there's a Melbourne bus timetable search app available for Android?
Yeah, it'd be up there with one of the casino apps, wouldn't it?
There's Train Trapper for trains, Tram Hunter for, well, you know, but I'd really like to have the trifecta. I've done a search in the Play Store, but no cigar.
I must admit, the buses have come of age in this town of recent times. Have you seen all the GPSing stuff and the signs that says the next bus will be along in 2.5 minutes?
They're the bus stops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're pretty cool.
They are pretty cool.
I don't remember the last time I caught a bus.
Oh, but you've driven past them. There's a big orange signs. You can't miss them.
GD, there is a Metlink app in the Google Play Store. It's been in beta for over a year now. I loaded it up. It does have all the bus routes. It's got like all the normal bus routes, and it's got Night Rider and Skybus, but it's a little bit clunky. It's a bit tricky to use, but that might be what you're looking for. But I certainly personally use Tram Hunter. That's great. And I've been using Train Trapper as well, which is also good.
Very good. I have no need for bus trips of recent times.
Yeah, I've got my own personal opinions about riding buses.
This is a tech show. We should move on.
We should. This is not the car park edition.
No.
Nick, via the contact form.
Hi, Nick.
Says, g'day, tech talkers. Sad to hear you're leaving. The show was the best way to start my Tuesday via podcast, as your show is not available on the beautiful Gold Coast on free to air.
We've had a lot of emails that start off like that in the last little while, so thank you everybody who sent in those sorts of thoughts.
Correct. Yes, thank you everybody. It's greatly appreciated.
We're not disappearing forever. You just got to know where to listen. You'll find us. Follow the right things.
I was wondering if you have some advice on NAS systems, in particular NAS systems that offer personal cloud style storage. I'm thinking of investing in a Synology NAS to be used as an offsite storage unit located at a parent's house. After your many discussions around data loss and backup, I found this to be a very interesting topic and one often forgot about by the majority of computer users.
Well, backing up?
Yes.
I'd say so.
I've implemented a Windows Home server to back up locally, but I'm also concerned about something going wrong with that solution. Why would you be worried about that, Nick? What are you trying to say? I always enjoy your discussions around backups and we'll miss the show next year. All the best for a well-deserved break. Many thanks, Nick. Thanks, Nick. I use FreeNAS at home.
I was going to mention FreeNAS. Yeah, it's a neat solution. I don't know whether it has all the things that you're looking for with your... I'm not quite sure what you're looking for when you say personal cloud-style storage. But yeah, FreeNAS is very good. You just download it. You jam it onto a USB stick or a CD-ROM, and it boots up. And then you can use all the disks in the computer that's attached as storage in some way or another. And you can just go down to your local computer shop and buy a really cheap machine these days for a couple of $100. Jam a couple of big hard disks in there, FreeNAS USB in the back, and away you go. Full-featured NAS.
The machine actually runs off the USB stick.
The operating system runs off the USB stick. And
I used to go shopping on Grays and buy up all the old HP workstations because they're really good for that. Because they apart from the fact they were solid and reliable, they were built like, you know, the proverbial tank. They actually had a lot of drive bays inside them. So one machine you could get, if you filled them, the only problem is they don't take 3 terabytes. Their BIOS is not capable of it. But 2 terabytes, you could probably put easily 8 or 12 terabytes in one box.
See, I'd go a different way. I'd go and buy a new machine. So you've got a warranty. But get a really cheap motherboard, the slowest processor available, couple of gig of RAM, and just fill it up with multi-terabyte hard disks.
The threes work well these days.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't cost what they used to.
Good idea. The other option too, you've probably heard me talk about CrashPlan of recent times, which I swear by. CrashPlan, if you don't want to actually buy their hosting and buy their cloud storage, you can still use the application, the CrashPlan app, and back up freely to other devices within your home network.
Okay, device to device.
Or I can back up to an off-site destination of someone like your parents, if they have a broadband or like, you, say for example, you, Graham. So can I use a bit of your bandwidth and can I use a bit of space on your hard drive?
I'll allocate your an account on my server, yeah.
Absolutely. I want to back up my photos or something like that. And it'll do it all in the background for you.
Yep.
And it's a great way to do off-site backups. So have a check it.
So it might be a case of a combination of technologies. You use that, you have FreeNAS sitting at home, and use an application like that to synchronize everything and make the NAS server one of your targets.
Absolutely. So you can back up locally using the CrashPlan client to your NAS. And then for the really sensitive bits, in case you live in a flood or a fire-prone area, like if you live in the hills around Melbourne or Adelaide or Sydney, you know, the risk of bushfire is real. So and if you live in some of the places like Brisbane, where you're going to get flooded.
Mm.
So
you can either drop a NAS server at your Relly's place, or subscribe to something like Dropbox and use some online storage.
Yeah, yeah. So there's plenty of options there.
Yeah.
FreeNAS.org is the website with more information about FreeNAS.
You've done a build lately? I think they're up to 8.0.2 or something, aren't they? Last one I built.
Not for a little while. Mine's probably 18 months old.
Yeah.
I'm running at
the moment. I think the Van Deventers use FreeNAS at their place, don't they?
They've got a big NAS in their house.
Got a couple of them, actually, I think. Yeah.
I've got three now.
Yeah.
I run two at the office and one at home.
There you go.
And they work really well. Very reliable.
Hope that's helpful, Nick, in some
small
way.
Lots of options, but you can pick and choose for what's going to help you out.
Absolutely. Tails, via the contact form, says, Techies and Techette.
She's not here tonight.
We'll pass on your regards, Tails. I'm very sad to hear you'll be hanging up the microphones. Yours were the voices of reason amongst the turbulence of self-interested chatter that often disrupts my weekly podcast stream. Your affable nature and Australian perspective will be sorely missed. Thanks, Tails. With respect to recent comments about Windows 8, though, I feel that Microsoft have been somewhat harshly judged and would like to address some of the more common complaints that people seem to have. Feel free to jump in here if it's appropriate.
No, please go ahead.
That there should have been a more gradual transition between Windows 7 and Windows 8. Tail says Windows 8 is clearly an attempt to merge the PC and mobile device experience. Mobile devices are here in force, and Microsoft needed the solution. ASAP, lest they miss the boat altogether. There just wasn't any time for a gradual change. Besides, sometimes change is for the better, even if it has to be forced. Business won't take to Windows 8. This is what I've said. So
this is what everyone says.
He says, so what? As far as I can tell, Windows 7 is going to be supported until at least 2020. And 7 years is a lifetime in tech. Not that I need to tell you that. In the meantime, Windows 8 can be tested by consumption users, feedback from whom can be incorporated into future iterations to make it more business friendly. It looks all different, and there's no start button.
You built one, didn't you, Dr. Ron?
I built a Windows 8 machine during the week.
I've got my hardware allocated. I have the ISO ready to rock and roll, but I haven't had the time yet. How did it go?
It went really well. The installation was flawless, and it just worked first time. And I don't think the interface is going to take that much to get used to. You're not going to use the Live Tiles interface on the desktop if you're used to a Windows 7 desktop.
How long did it take you to figure out how to launch your first app that wasn't a Metro app?
Ah, it's not called Metro. What's it called?
Live Tiles.
No, there's got Metro. A new name. Who cares?
It's Metro. Who cares?
Everyone knows it's Metro. Too late now.
It took a bit of fiddling and moving mouse pointers off the screen and doing crazy stuff like that. You just have to learn how to do it.
You've got to learn where the secret panels are.
That's right.
And they don't tell you where the secret panels are.
There are secret panels.
You've got to pull the third book from the left on the bookshelf.
All that sort of stuff, yes.
It's a bit like playing one of those Nintendo Wii games. You go, oh, look, there's a secret passage.
You just stand on one leg and pull on your right earlobe.
It's like playing that awful game that you guys recommended to me last week that comes with no documentation and no idea what to do, and you're just dumped in the middle of a desert with no
Journey.
With no clue as what to do.
You didn't listen to them, did you, Graham?
Did you play Journey?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Did you buy it?
No.
So you played up to the
I don't know.
You don't know. Okay.
I wandered around the desert for a bit.
On a desert with a horse with no name.
No horse, no nothing, no, just sand and some empty houses and...
You downloaded the right game.
Little things that fly around in the air.
I finished Journey during the week. Oh.
Did you?
Yes.
Well
yes.
done.
It was.
You have got too much better time.
No, it was very enjoyable. It was very good. Now...
Sorry, go on. Windows 8.
Windows 8. Journey. Yes. Yes, it Will is a be. Journey.
Yes.
We nearly finished the show. Can you hurry up?
Oh, sorry. Okay. Only if you promise to stop interrupting.
I've got Windows 8 stuff coming up from Adam.
It looks all different and there's no start button. Chalk this one up to the next to Damn Kids Get Off My Lawn and Horseless Carriages. They'll never catch on. Either use it or don't. But don't complain that things aren't the same as they used to be. It's what we call the real world. Windows 8 is for the average consumer. Well, why wouldn't it be, says Tails. Rather than trying to be all things to all people, they have instead decided to go for an excellent solution for most people's needs. Although it will leave some of the power users on the outer, this is perfectly reasonable for business. I'm no Microsoft fanboy, but at the very least, I think they should be applauded for taking a bold step in a new direction. Cheers, Tails.
I agree.
Oh, well done, Microsoft. Yep. Fine. Good.
We shouldn't jump too soon to, you know, pass judgment on an operating system. It's only a week old, really.
It is only a week old. I'll start to use it.
I've been using it for a lot more than a week.
I thought you built it and put it away and lost interest in it very quickly. No, you come back to it, haven't you?
Well, that machine sits in the lounge room. So whenever I sit in the lounge room and I'm watching TV, I inevitably end up picking up that computer and using it.
To do what?
I don't know. Do whatever you do on the computer while you're watching TV.
Find something else to watch.
You Google the show.
The program guide.
Find the program guide and go, why am I watching television?
Google all the info about what you're watching and chat with your friends and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Okay.
Carl.
More?
Oh, there's lots. Okay. We're a third of the way through. Via the contact form, says my email this week is in five parts. No, he doesn't. He says my email this week is in two parts. Firstly, I have an opposing thought on the iPad mini. Most of the panels seem confused as to why it exists at all.
Mm-hmm.
Lena said she saw no need for it. Graham felt there was no differentiation to make people buy both the large and small iPads. And Adam still seems bogged down in Apple's old approach of one size fits all, which clearly no longer applies when you look at Apple's range. No, says Carl. The reason the iPad mini exists is that many consumers simply don't want a tablet the size and weight of the iPad.
Correct.
But love the idea of what it can do and its quality.
That's why I got one.
So why you got one, Andrew?
That's exactly why I got one.
And is it for business or pleasure? Yeah,
I was using it today to do Q sheets, which is really good. Saves me getting out my big computer. I don't have to get out this thing. Says
what do you mean, Q sheets?
Ah, they're just, when you do TV programs, you have to add up and make sure they actually run the time they're supposed to be doing. I use Excel for that.
Okay.
And I just use that to do. They're called Q-sheets.
Okay, very good.
Carl says, now the rant. I get that Apple loves thin, and it makes great sense for things you need to slip in your pocket or bag.
Yep.
However, Johnny Ive's obsession with this is really starting to get absurd.
Who's Johnny Ive?
He's a senior VP of industrial design at Apple.
Is he the guy on the front page?
Design
of the,
guru.
He's a guy with a sharp pencil.
Yeah, maybe.
With a white T-shirt on?
Maybe. The new iMac may be 5 millimeters thin at the edge, but at the expense of an optical drive, which I still use regularly to rip CDs and DVDs and burn music.
Apple don't want you using an optical drive.
They don't at all. Apple may think I live in the past by using an optical drive, but I reckon I've got many millions of mates who live there too. And taking away a very useful component of a desktop computer just so they can gush over thinness is wearing thin. No pun intended. Regards, Carl. Prime, via the contact form, says, "Hi team, listening to the podcast, I think you missed a significant change with the new iMac and Mac Mini. Neither has a DVD player burner," apropos of what Carl's saying. "If you want that luxury, you need to buy an Apple or third-party external device that plugs into the USB."
Yeah, USB ones are cheap and cheap as chips. But yes,
they join the wafer thin MacBook Air without this.
I think, and then it makes a mess on your desk where you used to have this thing that was nice and all complete and looked all shiny and Mac-y, and now you've got a silly little external drive sitting on your desk.
Extra bits.
Yeah.
Mm.
One more thing. Adam will love this. We've had an Android tablet maker declare some actual sales. Asus Tech, who makes the Nexus 7 tablet for Google, said that sales have grown from an initial 500,000 at launch to around 1 million per month, achieved last month. Very impressive, but I can't see Apple being threatened by it. He's popped a link there to the Wall Street Journal. Best wishes to the team for the future. Regards, Prime.
Yeah, I think with the tablets, I think there is a market for a phone and a tablet. And the phones, I think, are getting... They were trying to be tablets. And if phones concentrate on being phones and that stay that size without getting too big, and tablets don't come all the way down to being a phone, then I reckon there's a market for two devices in your life.
Last but certainly not least, Gareth. Not Gareth, just Gareth.
Is there a difference?
It's not Gareth. Gareth's in the chat room, but I think that's not Gareth. This isn't not... Gareth, okay. This is Gareth. He says, "Hi, Tech Talkers. I've recently acquired an Acer Aspire 1 753 series." Have you used those, Graham? You use Acer... I've got an Acer Aspire netbook, I think, at home. Have you used the Acer Aspire 1 series machines?
Not a great deal. There's generic laptops, though.
So. Are they? "I would like to create a media hub to connect to my TV via HDMI."
Oh, yeah. Actually, laptops can be quite good to be a media center because they tend to be small. They've got, like, built-in UPS because they've got a battery in them. And, they're often a lot quieter than a desktop machine would be in the living room.
Mm.
So not a bad choice.
Gareth says he has enough storage. Anyway, yeah. The problem is he needs a quick operating system that will start really quick and is centered around media. This is probably a very simple problem, but I've been trying to find the right one for ages. Cheers, Gareth.
The only thing that springs to mind for that one is XBMC, which is a media center that was it's open source, was originally designed to run on hacked Xboxes, but the PC versions are up and running. Under Linux, but there's several, but at least one really good one where you can download with the operating system all included, all on one CD, and just burn it to disk and then install it from there. So, and it'll just boot up straight into the media center.
Now, the lady who's the expert on XBMC is not here this week.
No, she's on Twitter though.
Yeah, of course. There's more information though, Gareth, about XBMC at their website, which is xbmc.org. Have a look there and see all about that media center. It might be the right fit for you.
Probably as good a place to start as any. And the key to making it start up fast is probably to make sure that you've got a boot disk in your system that's an SSD drive. But I don't know, in the laptop you might only have room for one drive, so that might be an issue there.
You get some really small USB sticks these days. They're really thin.
So yeah, you might be able to boot from USB. That's a thought.
You
I'm
don't
not
even
sure
know
whether
that
you...
they're plugged into the side of the machine. They're that thin, but yeah.
Yeah, but booting an operating system off it might not be very fast, particularly if it's not USB 3.
Yeah, well, could be an option anyway.
CES in our chat room says Plex works okay.
Okay.
And HQ Man is plus one XBMC.
Ah, uh-huh. Okay.
A lot of plus one-ing going on tonight.
That's great. That's great. That's all the correspondence, Andrew. If you want to communicate with the panel, you can. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
Yeah, you can do that. And chat. Don't forget the chat. If they want to come now, you can come and say good day to us at chat.techtalkradio.com.au as well. So, yes.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed listening to Tech Talk Radio. Other things happened in the world today in the news. Did you hear about the storm?
The storm.
It was happening when we went to air this time last week.
Yes.
Sandy.
Hurricane Sandy.
Sandy did quite a bit of damage in and around the United States, especially up around that the New York area. And there's a lot of data centers and stuff up there. And I was reading during the course of the week that
some of them did go offline, yeah.
Yeah, a few did disappear for a while and came back. And they've had water issues. And obviously the supply of electricity to some of these data centers is a bit iffy. Because I think there's some New Yorkers that are going to be at least a week without electricity, just judging by the size, the sounds of things.
There's a Google launch event that was
postponed
or cancelled, actually.
There was. The Nexus
10. The launch still went ahead, but they didn't have the public event.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're in that part of the world, hope things come back together. There's been some great stuff on the news recently, too. I saw one fairly kind-hearted soul, a young girl who had actually had electricity in... I think it stopped at around about 44th Street in Manhattan. Lower Manhattan didn't have any electricity, but the upper part, which is about 45th and up, which Midtown and up into the park, Central Park, they had electricity up around there. And so she set up a table with battery chargers so people could come and plug in their phones so that those who lived a little bit downtown, could actually charge their phones and communicate with the rest of the world.
That's a nice thing to do.
All of the comms was out and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, there's some really entrepreneurial things.
I hope her power company gives her a nice discount for being a nice person. Yeah, I bet they don't.
Did you see the picture of the substation go up?
There was a video.
Yeah, it hit YouTube and all that. And, this massive flashes, I think the substation went up in smoke. So that looked like a big flash like that. You go, well, that's going to take a while to fix. we're thinking of the guys over there. There's been a lot of damage, obviously, to structures of houses and infrastructure as well. But from a technical speaking point of view, I think a lot of the tech is on the other coast, on the west coast, so it's sort of got unscathed. But there's a few data centers up around that part of the world where things became a little bit iffy. But Dr. Ron, the Google Nexus tablet, the 10-inch version, because there's three flavors of the Nexus, isn't there?
Now, I think. Yes, there are.
How do you go keeping track of all these things? There's so many tablets and so many manufacturers. Like, you've got Apple's things, you've got the Surface stuff from Microsoft, and now you've got the Google tablets, the Nexus 10, the 4, and the 7 in no particular order.
We're going to need a bigger whiteboard.
Yes.
To keep track of them all.
What do you think about the Nexus 10? It's the largest. It's really they're targeting the iPad with this one, aren't they?
Yeah, 10-inch display, $469 locally. So that's,
What size, what capacity is on that one?
No, I knew you were going to ask me an awkward question like that. There's a
$469,
I think it's a 16, 32, 64 type arrangement. I'm just trying to
draw parallels with the Apple version, because the Apple's iPad mini, which is not, that's the equivalent of the Nexus 7. Inch.
With a 7-inch display. Yeah.
So you'd have to do comparisons with the full-size iPad and stuff like that just to see which one was a bit better. And I'd be tipping that the Google one will be just a fraction cheaper than what the Apple one was. So
I'm yet to see an Android tablet that was convincing.
Convincing in what way? As in worked the way you expected it to work?
Yep.
I'm with Graham.
In terms of smoothness and reliability and ease of use.
I'm with Graham.
I love Android on my phone, and it works really well. But on the tablet, they just don't seem to quite be there yet. Not quite ready for prime
time.
Why
is that? Is that because they try to do too much, or the hardware isn't quite up to it? Or
no, I think Android kind of came... Android for phones been around a lot longer than Android for tablets. And I think it's just still developing. I think it's just still got a couple of years before it's a mature product. As of quite recently, they forked a different version for the tablets as compared with the phone. So we got Honeycomb version 3.
It is
for the tablets, and we've got versions 4 and 4.1, which are ice cream sandwich and jelly bean, respectively, for the phones. And so they've split them off so that there is now a separate stream for the tablets. But I just don't think it's quite ready yet. It just doesn't feel right yet.
Technology blog Gizmodo.
And yet the iPad is just such a good product. It just works so very well.
Gizmodo says our initial impressions of the Nexus 10 tablet suggest it might not have quite managed to do a whole lot better than its competition in terms of power, with its dual-core 1.7 gigahertz processor falling a little short over hardcore graphics work. It is, however, great value. Like most experiments, it may not have achieved the desired results first time around.
Oh, well. That happens, really, doesn't it? Just back to the Google Nexus stuff.
Smart Nexus 4 smartphone, $349.
Yeah, I've got here the Nexus 4 smartphone made by LG.
Yes.
Comes in 8 gig for $399, 16 gig for $500, and is equipped with 320 pixel per inch display, which is 1270 by 768 resolution. So built on a Snapdragon S4 quad-core processor. So, and of course, it comes with Wi-Fi. The mobile phone carrier stuff. So you can actually plug a SIM card into it, and I'm sure they'll have a Wi-Fi version of it as well.
They should be available here this time next week, or 13th of November.
Well, Christmas is coming, and this is what I was saying on the radio the other day. These things make fantastic Christmas presents for those who you just don't know who to buy for, and they're quite in the realms of possibilities for, you know, if you want to add them together and do, you know, Father's Day, Mother's Day, birthdays and Christmases all in once, which I think we're doing one of
those. It's not an inexpensive Christmas present. It's not a
but not a
block of chocolate for the stocking, is it?
Correct. But if you amortize it across many celebrations across the period of 12 months, it can be quite, it's justifiable. It comes down to about $30 an event, we've worked it out.
$30 an event. You say, okay, Dad, this is Christmas.
Correct.
Birthday, Father's Day.
Yeah.
Cup Day, everything else.
Yep. And if you choose the right company, the fruit one, they'll engrave it for you for free too. So you can leave that indelible memory etched into the back of something. So and it saves it when it gets lost too for kids.
The Nexus 7 Wi-Fi only version is $249. So that's a little bit cheaper than the iPad, isn't it? The iPad's 300 and something, isn't it?
Sorry, how much was that? The Nexus
The Nexus 7
is
$249 Australian.
Is that the Wi-Fi version only?
That's the Wi-Fi only version, Wi-Fi 16 gig.
Yeah.
So compared with your iPad mini, which is also a 7-inch.
Yeah, $369 for the 16.
Mm.
$450-something or other for the 32.
Yeah, so $249 for the 16 compared with what you're saying.
But you get what you pay for.
You do get a different product.
Yeah. One of the things which I've been tinkering with is the Apple Music sharing, and which is being problematic with iOS 6. I must admit I spent some time on that trying the other night to get it to work properly, and it hasn't quite stepped up to the mark yet. But on the other side of things, the free VoIP calls, or, you know, using FaceTime and all those things, it just works, and it works very well.
Hmm.
And if you, the cameras are terrific in it, the ability to just drop your app in Dropbox, it just works. It's just fine, and it's all good. So, and that's what I say. If you want, go down the Google path. But as you were saying, Graham, there, I take heed in what you say.
Yeah. If it's for somebody who's perhaps a first time tablet user or not a very tech sort of a person, then I would be going to the iPad. If you're a tinkerer like we are, then you're gonna have fun tinkering with your Android device. That's for sure.
Get both.
But yeah, you might not. If you need it for business or it's a first-time user, not a techie person, then definitely I'd be going towards the iPad.
Excellent. All right, let's take a break, shall we?
Yeah, let's.
It's very warm in the studio tonight. Summer is with us here in the Southern
Hemisphere. It is very, very balmy and muggy, isn't it?
None more so than in the studio this evening.
Warm and raining when we arrived. You don't get more Melbourne than that.
Absolutely. Take a break. We'll be back with a view from the couch.
Oh, what's the view about? Is he talking about the Mini?
No, he did it last week.
Windows 8, Windows 8.
It's Windows 8.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. Good.
So a bit of that coming up after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Confirmed new iPad mini to debut in October.
That sounds a bit winfo.
Yes, this is good news.
You shouldn't be able to patent things that are either obvious or natural progressions from things that already exist.
Maybe it can loop through.
The red is Office, the green is Xbox.
It's going to make life harder rather than easier.
Well, now you've railroaded me.
Sorry.
On its face.
Whoa.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Indeed you are. We're back. Hello. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. And Dr. Ron is in this evening. Graham is
suitably
in this evening.
Hydrated now, thank you.
Yeah, no, it was good. I needed that. Anyway, we've been speaking a little bit about Windows 8. Windows 8, the questions need to be asked, is it? Are we passing judgment on it too soon? Of which some would say, possibly. Possibly.
Some did say.
Well, yeah. Anyway.
Can you do a new install yet, Graham? The one that I did was an upgrade from Windows 7.
Oh, really? That's a bit ugly.
Mm.
Well, mine was a new install, but mine was the preview version.
Okay.
So I haven't installed the final version yet.
Mm, I got mine from TechNet, and I upgraded a Windows 7 machine to see how smoothly it went. And
did you try to do a clean install? Or
no,
I didn't. Okay.
Mm.
Anyway. Here's this week's View from the Couch. Adam has an opinion on Windows 8. He also has an opening salvo for our friend who isn't here this evening, Lena. Probably just as well, really. Here's the view for this week.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
As fun as it is to bait Lena with talk of the iPad Mini, this week I think it's time to look at Windows 8 again. Now, Windows 8 computers, tablets and smartphones might struggle to stand out from the crowd, but I think the Windows 8 ecosystem is more than the sum of its parts. Windows 8 has finally gone legit, with Windows 8 desktops and notebooks on the shelves and Microsoft starting to ship pre-ordered Surface tablets. Windows Phone 8 handsets such as Nokia's slick Lumia 920 should go on sale in the next few weeks. Individually, these gadgets are a hard sell alongside their Apple and Android counterparts, but I'm convinced that Windows 8 is more than the sum of its parts. While it offers a steep learning curve for some, the touch-friendly modern UI is Windows 8's killer feature, as it unites desktops, notebooks, tablets and smartphones under the one interface, the one ecosystem and the one app store. Once you've come to terms with modern UI and Windows 8 on the desktop, Microsoft's tablets and smartphones could look a lot more attractive, especially if you haven't already been initiated into the world of Apple or Android. Personally, I don't think modern UI has anything to offer business users except for headaches, but it could be just what some home users have been waiting for. Even then, it's reasonable to ask, why would you favour a Windows 8 gadget over its established competitors with their more mature app stores and wider range of ecosystems? The clear response to this question from the pro-Microsoft crowd is that tight integration with the Windows ecosystem is the Surface's strength and Windows 8's strength in general. Cross-platform gaming between devices and integration with the Xbox 360 platform will grab some people's attention, while others might be tempted by the streaming music service. The big attraction for many people seems to be Office compatibility along with the flexibility of USB and microSD ports. Initially, I dismissed the pre-installed Office RT as an advantage because both Apple and Google offer Office alternatives. I'm happy enough to use Windows 7 and perhaps even Windows 8, but personally I stay as far away from Microsoft Office as I can. But the truth is that many people don't want to use these Office-like alternatives. They live in an office-centric world, whether it be for work or study, and they want a tablet experience that just works with Microsoft Office rather than needing to shift their documents in and out of iCloud or Google Apps. They also want a seamless experience when jumping between desktop and mobile devices, something which can still be hit and miss in the Apple and Google ecosystems. If you already live a Microsoft-centric life, then Windows 8 may be just what you've been waiting for. Microsoft is actually leading the way here with the unified Windows 8 interface. Apple is heading in that direction with iPadOS tweaks to macOS, but Microsoft's gamble could pay off. Although, to be honest, I'm not more confident that Microsoft can pull it off. Not because Windows 8 is terrible, but because Microsoft is terrible at selling itself. I saw my first Windows 8 advertisement on television recently, and it simply looked like an iPad wannabe. There was no sense of the ecosystem and of the smooth interoperability between devices, because that would require a consistent, wider strategy which Microsoft just seems incapable of maintaining. The Surface tablets were treated as an aside at the Windows 8 launch, and only two units were available for the country's tech media to try out, even though the journalists were actually more interested in the Surface tablets than Windows 8 itself, which we've seen for several months. Then there were the so-called pop-up Windows 8 stores in around the country, which reportedly weren't much to get excited about either. Then Windows Phone 8 was relegated to an entirely separate launch. Microsoft really isn't getting across this unified message. Individually, these Microsoft gadgets will struggle to win people away from Apple and Android. The ecosystem is the killer feature, but Microsoft seems so large and fragmented that the left and right hands never synchronize the calendar appointments. If modern UI and interoperability really are Microsoft's killer features, then it needs to do a better job of conveying that in a cross-promotional blitz. It should also make the desktop transition as smooth as possible, rather than risk alienating people by forcing modern UI down their throat. Users who resent modern UI in their PCs are unlikely to want it on a tablet or a smartphone. But that's exactly the situation Microsoft is risking by going too hard, too fast. It seems the success of Windows 8 tablets and smartphones could well hinge on people's acceptance of Windows 8 on the desktop. Right now, this is Microsoft's game to lose, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes.
Well, he's right about one thing. It will be interesting to see how it plays out.
It will be interesting to see how it plays out, won't it? It's certainly got a lot of interesting... I don't know, things are going to happen. But what's going to happen, we don't know. We don't have that crystal ball out yet. And as Adam was saying, the fragmentation between the operating system and its phone system is... Like, admittedly, you know, you look at Apple. Apple has their Mountain Lion, and they have their iOS 6. And Windows will have Windows 8 and Phone 8.
Yeah, but Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 will have a common code base.
Yes.
Which is different.
Well, you don't think Mountain Lion and all that does? Not being
I don't think they do.
Okay.
I think they are separate products completely, aren't they?
I would have thought so, because you think iOS 6. So they all started off, you know, powering those little small gadgets, phones/iPods.
Mm.
And they've turned into being smartphone OSs as well now. So anyway, Australian telcos are preparing for the considerable enterprise adoption of the new Windows Phone 8 devices. Now, this is according to IT News, following Microsoft's formal launch of the platform last week. The new mobile operating system replaces Windows Phone 7, which I think a lot of people didn't speak very highly of. I think Brian in the office, who is now married, by the way, he got married last Friday.
Congratulations, Brian.
Yeah. Which is good. He's currently in Hawaii surfing tsunami waves.
You won't be listening, no.
No, well, I don't know. He might be. You'll never know. But I think he'd be, yes, honeymoon. You're not going to listen to us, are you?
No.
Although there's probably some strange people out there that would.
Anyway,
where were we? He had a phone 7, and I think he had it for about 3 weeks.
Yes, that's right. It didn't last long, did it?
And then he went back to iPhone, I think it was. So I don't know what happened to that. I think he hocked it on eBay to poor unsuspecting soul. Anyway, phone 8 apparently is going to be a tad more, well, so they say. I haven't seen a phone 8 in the wild yet. Mm. Windows 8, phone 8 thing. I haven't seen any of the 8 stuff in the wild yet, apart from stuff I've been tinkering with and what you brought in and showed us, Graham, before the pre-release version of the actual operating system.
Well, that was Windows 8, not
yes.
Windows Phone. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen Phone 8, nor have I seen the Windows 8 in the wild as of yet. So, it's interesting times. Do you reckon... I know we speculate a lot about these sort of things, but traditionally the person who's the last on the block never sort of gets the foot up into the industry that they need, because everyone else has jumped on other ships, if you know what I mean. They're either on the Android or on the Apple side of things. And here comes Windows. And do you think compatibility amongst handsets for, like, social networks are handy? What I mean by social network, you know, the young people. Everyone has peer group pressure to get an Apple, or everyone has a peer group pressure to get a particular device.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I can't see Phone 8 being in that category.
No, but I don't think that's where Microsoft wanted to be anyway. So I don't know that that's a big problem. I think
you're right. They're pitching an enterprise, aren't they?
I think they are. I think they want
the new BlackBerry. Welcome, Phone 8.
I think they want your phone to be an extension of your Exchange and SharePoint infrastructure, so that you've got your and Link and all that, so that it's all it ties into all your Microsoft server infrastructure at your head office.
Gareth says he's listening to Tech Talk Radio on Tune In on my Windows phone. That's broken pidgin English.
On
Tune In. Oh, there you go.
Tune
is it?
Radio.
That's the app,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right, let me read that again. I'm listening to Tech Talk Radio on Tune In on my Windows app. Please use those little doovy talkie mark things. It makes so much easier when you're reading those sort of things. Tune In's an app, is it? There you go.
Yeah.
You live and learn.
Tune In Radio.
Tune In Radio.
What are the app stores like on Phone 8? There you go, Gareth. You got 20 minutes. Shoot us a little thing about what you think about the app store on Phone 8. Mountain Wombat, Phone 8 promises to be more complete, but I reject Phone 7 because it was not really complete. Yeah, well, I think that's the conclusion that we've drawn here in the studio this evening too. So watch this space. We'll talk about it in our last five shows. We might even see one.
We'll probably talk about it after that. We will. You'll see one of us will write something next year as things develop further.
Yes. All right. Graham, you were talking about something before the show this evening too. The politicians have been saying things that they really shouldn't have been saying. Can you tell us a bit more about this?
Yeah, this story was the federal shadow education minister, who is Christopher Pyne, MP, said in an interview on Triple J's Hack program, which was aired on the 29th of last month. He was interviewed talking about the National Broadband Network.
So about 2 weeks ago, was it?
Less than that, yeah. And one of the things he said was this.
Well, the NBN is not up and running. They have connected 6,500 households in 3 years under the National Broadband Network, and not one household or school has been connected at 100 megabits per second, which was their promise.
Now, that, as I said, that's the Federal Shadow Education Minister speaking on ABC Radio Triple J about a week ago.
This is the reason why he's in education, I guess.
Well, I think his education is a little bit lacking because...
Stick to your portfolio, buddy.
Well, the question was education-related, because what he was asked was about whether the take-up of the NBN was going to assist people doing distance education, delivering education courses over things like video conferencing and so on. So that was why he was asked about it, and that's why it was a question for his portfolio.
Okay. I thought he was talking about it in general, but no, he's talking about education.
Well, it was, but that's why he mentioned that no households or schools, because what he was asked was about distance education. But the issue was that he said not one of them was connected at 100 megabits per second. Said not one household or school has been connected at 100 megabits per second in the 6,500 households connected. Which just a couple of weeks before, in the Senate estimates hearing, the NBN Co. Head of Product Development, a bloke by the name of Jim Hassell, he said that the proportion of customers signing up for 100 megabit speeds had grown up to 44% of services are at the top tier of speed connecting to the NBN.
That's nearly half.
That's nearly half, and that's well ahead of the projections that were released early on with the NBN's corporate plan, which projected that the majority, 52%, would pick the entry-level speed of 12 megabits per second, and only 8% taking up the high 100 megabit per second plan. Now, and that's the change in 2 years, that in fact people are taking up the very highest speed plan they can, which is 100 megabits per second. And, you know, my message to Christopher Pyne would be that not only does he need to check his facts when he's talking on the radio, and he's refused to retract the comment, by the way, even when he's been contacted by other media organisations.
Really?
He has.
Does this surprise you, really?
Well, no, it doesn't, because, well, the question is...
It's up to us to bring people like Mr. Pyne to account and to highlight errors where errors are made in a public forum, but it doesn't really surprise me, unfortunately.
Do you think he's uneducated and just doesn't know? Do you think he just hasn't done his research? Or do you think he's just outright lying?
No, I think he's been misinformed.
I think he's just misinformed.
Someone's...
His minions down the track, because they can't keep up to date with everything. They get briefs by people, and I reckon they've been ill-informed.
So why wouldn't he retract the comment even after he has been correctly informed?
That's a question for the minister, isn't it?
It is, and it's one that should be asked. So I guess my message to our listeners, who probably are better informed, is to spread the word, you know, with your friends and family and people that you talk to at work who might be getting their news through, you know, mainstream media and might hear comments like this coming from people like this, that, you know, we need to spread the word that that's not the case, and that people are saying things that are just downright wrong, completely and utterly untrue. So that's what I have to say about that.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens with any ramifications. If he does actually correct himself down the track, which will be interesting to see. So,
Mod in our chat room says he can't wait for the NBN. People 200 metres away from where he lives have got it.
That'd be worse. That'd be
frustrating.
Yeah.
I guess what could be worse is people 100 metres away from you would have it. But, have those sort of speeds would be just to die for. Like, I think as Graham and I were talking about before we came on air this evening, you know, like, we're getting used to the wonders of LTE, which is the new 4G or the long-term evolution technology, which a lot of the phone companies are rolling out. And as you guys have seen during some of the tweets during the course of the week, Exhibit AI managed to get just short of 60 megabits per second down standing in the office at work. Now, I'd kill for that on a fixed line
mobile
service.
Phone handset. That's a phenomenal speed.
The best thing is that you get 20 megabits per second up when you do that.
And I've just got 20 megabits per second down here sitting in the studio, which is also pretty amazing.
And 2.5 megabits per second up, which most of us don't get on our ADSL lines.
No.
But to get 20 megabits per second upload in a 4G area, I mean, that's the upload speed of what we're getting download on our ADSL lines. And for a lot of people, that's the big restriction of the current technology, is that we, you know, if we're creating content or sending high resolution images or, you know, complex documents or images or video as part of what we do as in business or in our hobbies, then upload speed is critical, and that's one thing that's really lacking with the ADSL technology.
Too right.
So, look, my business deals with other small businesses, and every one of my customers is just hanging out to get on the NBN. They just don't. They're either growing at a rate and they want to be able to sustain that and have faster speeds, or they're frustrated by the inability to send large items by over the wire. I work with a company that does publishing. They publish a paper, and they've got to send all their copy over the wire to the people that do the printing.
Look at me!
And
look at me! Ryan, look at me! Look at me!
Andrew sitting right in front of me, who produces video and has got to send it to his customers and to his customers' customers.
Absolutely.
You'll be able to get it up. You copy it onto optical disc and chuck it in a courier bag, don't you? That's faster.
Well, actually, like, just to give you an example of getting a half-hour television program from off the computers at the office up to a television network, you're looking at around about 11 gig.
Yep.
And that's a bit too big for NBN. I mean, sorry, a bit too big for the traditional ADSL.
For ADSL, yeah. How do you get that there?
The local man comes and picks it up and puts in the back
of
his truck.
So you've still got to put on a bike and pedal it around.
Absolutely.
Ridiculous.
Absolutely. At least it's a hard drive. No longer do we use those videotape things. Oh.
What if you had to send it to the UK or to Los Angeles or Washington?
You use DHL or one of those international courier things. Unless, of course,
put it on a plane. That's ridiculous these days.
It is. Couldn't agree with you more. But unfortunately, that's the limitations that we have.
That'll take hours and hours to get there. It'll take days to get overseas.
Well, you can actually book a satellite feed and pay exorbitant costs if you have to get it that way.
It's not cost effective, though. That's the issue.
Or you can pop down the local library that's got NBN, which I don't know any of yet. So, but yes.
This is the future of our country we're talking about here, being able to do these things.
And this leads on to the next technology. We talked about our handsets being able to download incredibly fast LTE signals. What do you reckon Telstra's going to do when NBN rolls out? Are they going to compete against NBN Cove from a download speed point of view? Because already in our handsets in city areas and even in some rural areas like Shepparton, where the rural juror sits, there's all sorts of places where you can actually download at incredibly fast speeds, which you probably wouldn't be able to get normal ADSL up there for. So are they going to start competing with the NBN Cove?
Well, certainly.
Yes and no.
Won't they? They'll have an edge if they've got faster speeds.
This is where they're going to get their money from.
Faster speeds than the NBN.
But the NBN, because it's fixed, it's fixed location with either optical fibre or fixed wireless as opposed to mobile wireless, should be able to be cheaper and to provide a more stable service. Okay? Your mobile phone network shouldn't ever quite be a direct competitor for that, because it's just it's expensive and it's not the right technology for the job. It's less reliable and more expensive. Your mobile data network is for mobile data, not for your home data.
I hear that, but I also, a real example the other day, I had to get something uploaded very quickly to an upload site. And I just tethered to the mobile broadband and used LTE, and it went up like that.
I must admit, if I was in that situation and I had a couple of gigs I needed to get somewhere real quick, I'd do the same these days.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was a good fail-safe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very good fail-safe, whereas the DSL...
But it shouldn't be the primary.
No.
The other issue is that you're faced with is that your monthly bandwidth on ADSL is going to be 100, 200, 250 gigabytes, yeah. But on a mobile data plan at the moment, we're still in the world of 1 gigabyte or two and a half gigabytes.
Well, that's what Telstra was saying in that press release that came out earlier this evening. That's where their cash cow is, so they're trying to squeeze every little bit out of that as they can.
It's not just the cash, too. I mean, even Telstra's brand new LTE network will fall apart if everybody uses it as their primary data network. It just won't be able to cope. There's just not enough bandwidth. There's just not enough frequencies for people to use to be able to use it that way. Now, they'd have to occupy the entire spectrum from shortwave to light. It's that to be able to carry that amount of data. It'll never be right for the job.
It's not what the radio spectrum's for.
No, and it's not the way you just can't use it that way. Whereas with an optical fibre, you can use the entire light spectrum on that fibre, and then you can use it again on the fibre that's sitting right beside it. So,
I wonder if Malcolm Turnbull's listening to our argument this evening.
Hello, Malcolm Turnbull is the only one who's likely to understand it. The only one on that side of politics. On that side of politics who's likely to understand it. The rest of them, I think, just don't understand the basic physics of the problem that this stuff just won't work. They think that you can do everything wireless. They think that you can use Telstra and XG for the whole shebang and use that as your home connection as well. And it's just not going to work.
In other news this week, Apple is in breach of a UK court order.
I like this.
This might make you chuckle. The UK Court of Appeal has rapped Apple's knuckles for failing to comply with a court order requiring the company to post on its website a simple statement saying Samsung had not copied its iPad designs.
Yes, they were ordered to put this statement up on their website. And they
failed to do that. They said, oh, they'll never know. Let's not do it.
They put something up.
They did it on white or something.
No. It was there.
Oh, was
it
there?
It was in small print. But the whole
point.
The whole gist of the thing was that, Samsung won this case, but we've won the cases in other jurisdictions and our products are better and the court said this and the court said that. Everything sort of except apologising.
Is this what they call an untrue notice?
Yeah.
An untrue notice is still up on Apple's UK website.
Mm. It was still there last time I looked. It may well be gone by now. The other thing that they went back to court and the court said, this is not an apology. This is not compliant with the order that we gave you. Go and fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
And Apple's lawyer said, oh, it'll take us 2 weeks to change it.
This is Michael Beloff.
And the judge said to that he wanted a written explanation from the Apple CEO to explain why it would take a technology company 2 weeks to change a simple statement on their website.
Yeah, you'd give them 24 hours or something, wouldn't you? Give them half a business day.
Absolutely. Yeah, they can alter their iPad coming soon thing and take down their whole shop and just change it.
They'd have
a
massive team of people that would be constantly tweaking and updating the website. Yeah. There's no reason why they couldn't just make a correction.
Yeah,
no.
I'm sure Google or Microsoft could do it quite easily on their behalf, you know. Yeah.
So, yes, they got... they didn't make the judge happy in that case in the UK.
The judge told Apple it had 48 hours to post a correction on its homepage with a link to the corrected statement and at least in 11-point... font.
There you go.
11 point, you know, nothing less, but it could be more, but I don't think so. Not an Apple's thing. Mega Upload Man, Kim.com.
He's still around.
He's still around. Yeah. He's back, in fact, just to stick it up
to
the authorities.
Didn't we do this last week?
We did, but he's just a bit more on that. He's actually going to launch a site called Mega, and he's given the responsibility of ownership back to the users. So once they're uploaded, it all falls on them. So he's back for more of the same. He hasn't learned anything. He's just changed the words in his terms and conditions.
He's learned to write better terms and conditions, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And maybe he should just try something new, like, you know, alpaca farming or something. Just get out of internet or, you know.
I don't think he changed a
fruit and veg shop.
Yeah.
Well, he changed his name to, there you go, fruit and veg. He could call himself apple.com. Oh, hang on.
No.
He changed his name to kim.com by deed poll. So his legally name is Kim. That's why they refer to him as Kim.com in the news press, because that's his name.
Mm.
So if you've got into fruit and veg, watch out, Apple. But yes, he could go and do other things, couldn't he? But anyway, there you go. Mega Upload is going to come back in all of its glory in a cloud somewhere near you, which will be out of anyone's particular jurisdiction, because a bit of the file will be stored in one country and a bit of a file will be stored in another country.
Use it at your own risk, and we'll move on to the next story.
Qantas, yeah. The flying kangaroo.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you were listening to the news locally here in Melbourne. A kangaroo got stuck in the Qantas car park at Tullamarine Airport.
Yeah,
the
that
other
was
day.
A bit unfortunate.
And everyone thought it was a publicity stunt, but it wasn't. It was a real kangaroo that got stuck in the car park. Poor don't know thing. Why, but yes, poor thing. Anyway, that's not what this story is about.
Oh.
Qantas has deployed Optus Wi-Fi services in 40 frequent flyer lounges across the country, replacing a Telstra network that travellers just said was a bit unreliable.
Interesting.
The new free service was deployed by Qantas subsidiary Alpha West, under a 5-year managed service contract link last year. So there you go. If you're flying Qantas, you'll be using an Optus network and their Wi-Fi.
Well, that is interesting, because I've got a couple of customers who use that Qantas lounge and always come to me and say, why does my Wi-Fi not work in the Qantas lounge? And I test the Wi-Fi, everything's working fine.
This is why.
So it might be that the Qantas Wi-Fi was the problem.
It was. Well, anyway, Optus are now doing it. It's available in Adelaide, Brisbane, Canberra, Darwin, Hobart, Melbourne, Perth, Sydney, Alice Springs, Broome, Coffs Harbour, Cairns, Karratha, Kalgoorlie, Launceston, Mackay, Port Hedland, Townsville, and Rockhampton. And if I missed anyone out, sorry.
Alpha West are in a bit of trouble at the moment.
Why? What's the matter with them?
They're slashing and cutting a lot of jobs.
Oh, let's talk about Vodafone, shall we?
Well, yeah, like Vodafone aren't the Lone Ranger. Yeah.
Vodafone has lost, what, 500,000 customers in the last, 12 months? They've turned over to Telstra, you can tell, because the speeds are a bit slower than they used to be. A lot of people on the network now.
And now Vodafone Australia says they're going to axe about 500 jobs.
And right across the board, too, from middle management. They've got a new CEO, not CEO, CFO, haven't they?
Yeah, new chief technology officer.
They brought in the Kiwis.
A couple of new business analysts.
Yeah. So, and they're going to get rid of the coalface workers, some of the telemarketers at the retail. I don't know whether about shops, but certainly on the phones.
Yeah, contractors and marketing staff and customer service people.
And they're still going to roll out 4G. How are they going to do that? Obviously, they're going to strengthen their... they have to compete, so they have to strengthen their grip in the 4G market.
So let's see.
So they still have to put their money into hardware.
They have to have a grip in the 4G market to start with, which they haven't.
We sack the sales team and we sack the support team and then put up a new network. That's going to work out really well for them, isn't it?
Yeah. I wonder if they've thought about this. have you thought of consulting to them, Graham? what's his name? Nigel Dews.
No idea.
Was the CEO, wasn't he? Nigel. I remember having a few grabs from him across the course of time.
Bill Morrow. I'm CEO.
Oh, is he now? I thought Nigel had something to do with it. Or maybe he was in a past life. So what's the upshot with Vodafone? Are they... Three's disappeared now altogether.
Well, Three and Vodafone are the same thing.
Yeah, but there's no active commercial presence now for Three, is there?
No, virtually
it's all,
not
It's all
anymore.
Been assimilated by the Borg and now is part of Vodafone. So.
And they have to rebuild and get some credibility back and win the odd customer back if they can.
Do you reckon it's because...
I think it does say something about the number of customers that went from the cheap discount carriers of Three and Vodafone that went to the expensive but quality carrier of Telstra. So I think it might have taught a lot of people that in some parts of the industry you do get what you pay for.
Exactly.
So maybe there's good lessons in it.
All right. Take a break. Back with more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
I'm watching less and less free-to-air television. It's just atrocious.
I just wish the Chaser were back on air.
Sad state of affairs when you're looking at the Chaser for cents.
And three-day shooting first.
Don't even start me on that.
You used to make mixtapes. You'd have a blank cassette.
I did discover a workaround.
There's a workaround for Greedo shooting first.
No. You can get the squirty one.
Ew.
I think fault's on both sides.
Yeah, a little turned on right now.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra has shifted gears in its fight to stop naked DSL being mandated as a wholesale service. No, say it isn't so. Naked DSL, which is the technology that allows the internet to be connected to your home via your traditional copper phone line.
Via your 19th century copper phone line technology.
That's the one. Without having just a dial tone on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Telstra, it's known to everyone that Telstra likes having a phone service into the house because that's part of the, you know, that's their income. That's what they do.
And it's also known to everybody that no one needs one anymore because we've all got our mobiles and they're all on capped plans.
I wish you could tell my wife this. I keep telling her this, but no, I want to keep the copper line. Why? Get rid of it. We don't need it. We all have phone numbers and VoIP numbers. The kids can dial out and VoIP. Doesn't cost you anything.
Just get a VoIP service but get one of those converters so it connects to a normal phone. And she won't know the difference.
She will, because it's not the same number. That's the only thing. I want that number.
Can't you port that number across?
Oh, it's too hard.
Yeah, you can.
You can, but it's too hard.
Oh, okay.
Trust me, I've tried.
No, it shouldn't be too hard. Get onto the TIO if you're getting the runaround.
It should be really easy.
It should be very easy.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. It's a story for off air.
No, oh, is it? It's another story there.
Been there, done that. And anyway.
The spouse acceptability factor is just not there.
Ah, no. She likes those numbers. They're the ones that you normally give out to the school and all that sort of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Telstra, the carrier, has provided a supplementary submission to the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission's wholesale ADSL inquiry. And they basically said, no, it's too hard, this you know, ADSL without a phone number. Without a phone service on it. And I think, well, why is it too hard?
It's not. Anyway, it's really easy.
It's just one of those things that if we can put another obstacle in the way, we will, and we can, and we should, and we have, and move on type sort of stuff.
Please don't take another thing away from us. Oh.
But, yeah, ADSL is great, up a naked service. It's all it needs to be. You want a phone line with it, you pay extra. About $40 a month extra or something, isn't it? But they're trying to dilute all that on plans these days, too. You get the home bundles. Oh, God.
A previous government gave them what used to be a public asset, the entire phone network and exchanges and cables and all the rest of it, and now they're complaining as it gets taken away from them bit by bit by bit, either by being moved to NBN stuff or just by people not needing it anymore.
Mm. Now, Australia Post launched its digital mailboxes.
Oh, dear.
And then they unlaunched it.
Oh, no.
If there is such a word.
It's funnier and funnier.
Oh, exactly. Early on in the week, Australia Post launched its digital mailbox service, positioning as a secure online delivery channel for bills and official correspondence between consumers and their service providers. The free service is underpinned by Telstra's cloud infrastructure and forms part of a $2 billion effort to modernise in the face of the failing mail revenue. So anyway, Australia Post, good idea. Let's do this. Anyway, they built it, but the problem was none of the consumers could log in.
So they built it, but no one came.
No, they came, but they couldn't log in.
Oh, okay.
What's worse, apparently they ended up, you had to log in with your, or create an account and click on a button, which then took you off to a page which had a 404 error. And as a result, the postal service has decided to unlaunch it and fix a few problems. Like, hello, wouldn't that be just one of the fundamental things you go and do? Whoever developed the system, you'd go and do a dry run through, stop using the back end stuff, and come in as a consumer and do your testing that way. Really?
It's been embarrassing for Senator Conroy.
Really?
He launched it.
Oh, did he?
Not so long ago.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know the right honourable. Oh, he did too, didn't he?
Mm.
I thought he was the minister for newfangled things.
What?
Like the things
Australia Post would come under his purview. So,
would it?
Yeah. Mm.
Well, it was like the PMG department, wasn't
communications.
It?
Communications.
Postmaster General.
Yeah, it's half of the PMG, I guess. Yeah.
I guess so.
So, anyway, good on that. That was one of those things. There's almost an odd spot there, Dr. Ron.
There's almost an odd spot in that. Yeah.
Almost. They launch it and then they pull it in.
I'll have to change
Maybe
it
there's a Tech Talk radio in another country. They could talk about Australia's. Yeah, anyway.
Sure, they do.
Geo blocking is not uncommon. We all know what it is. If you're listening to this show, chances are you do know what geo blocking is. On the odd chance that you don't, it's the ability to remove your location from an IP request on the internet. So, for example,
geo blocking is controlling where your content can go based on geographic.
Yes, and if you're in the UK, you have to fudge or forge or whatever the word is that you're actually in the UK, and you're entitled to get that feed or that access to that site. And you can use the geo-blocking, or traditionally you would be geo-blocked because you're in Australia, but if you remove the geo-blocking, you can be anywhere.
Yeah, the geo-blocking is what the BBC used to make sure that only people in the UK can watch their videos. And, yeah, what you're doing is getting around the geo-blocking by doing other things.
Yes, using virtual private network-y type sort of things, or little tricky things to get around it.
Or DNS hacks and stuff, yeah.
So now you know what it is. The competition watchdog says that users have power to improve IT pricing and access to products. And the reason they're saying this is due to the fact that savvy Australians are using geo-blocking to get their content from other places.
Oh, really?
Oh, truly?
Mm. No. Savvy Australians are defeating geo-blocking to get their content from other places. They're working around the geo-blocking.
They are indeed. Yeah. Yes, you're right, Graham. Internet users who circumvent the blocking mechanisms on overseas content via legal and illegal means are pressuring vendors and rights holders to change their practices. Something that this man over on the table has been saying, let's do this. You know, let's change the habits. I must admit I have too, because it's all for the consumer then. Anyway, the ACCC said that despite technological countermeasures such as geographic restrictions and encryptions, overseas vendors have been unable to prevent Australian consumers from purchasing their products abroad. But I have a question. Why would they? Why would you stop someone who is clever enough to get to your door and buy your product? Why would you stop them from doing that? Is there a moral obligation, a legal obligation,
Usually the reason they do it is because of a contractual obligation.
That sounds like a Monty Python album.
Well, yes, it is.
It is a Monty Python album.
The reason is that they've got an agreement with someone else that says that someone else is allowed to provide that content to Australians, and therefore they are not.
That's true.
The other reason they would do it in the case of someone like the BBC is because they're funded by a particular group. In that case, they're funded by the citizens of the United Kingdom through their television license fees. So they want to restrict the amount that they have to spend to provide only to that group and not have to spend a lot of extra money providing to the entire world. So they're the two reasons they would do it.
Yeah, British taxpayers are supporting the operation of the BBC.
And television licence holders, yeah.
And Andrew comes along and looks at something off the BBC. Doctor
Who in high definition, and you haven't paid for it.
Yeah,
you go and buy a television licence and then you can access it.
Well, the ABC has paid for it for me.
Yeah, the ABC. I'm sorry, but the ABC at the moment is a joke. They're showing all that stuff in 576i, horribly compressed and with no respect for the viewers.
It's not just the ABC, it's all the stations.
Yeah,
it's all of them.
The ABC's so well-intentioned, they've got the right idea, but they just do it in the worst possible way.
Their eye view needs to lift. They need to get up into the HD side of stuff. The bandwidths in the city can support it. The NBN's rolling out, that'll be able to support it shortly. Hello? Hopefully they're going to up the ante there on the resolution a bit, rather than watching pixelated blurriness that looks like a generation of a VHS tape on iView. Sorry, that's my rant for the night. Anyway, back to geo-blocking. Currently, the ACCC does not have any of the powers, or doesn't have any powers, actually, to pursue companies that attempt to prevent Australians from buying overseas versions of its products, unless the block is in place for anti-competitive processes.
Yep.
So there you go. Defeat it.
But it's also, generally in Australia, it's possible... It may or may not be illegal. It's not very clear whether it's legal or not to use services like Unblock Us to access content from other markets.
I guess if you look at it, what the individual does is just acquiring content streamed predominantly from another country. Really, that's what they're doing. And each content, then you've got to look at the legalities of that particular piece of content. And as you were saying before, Graham, if it's available here.
We have a funny law in Australia that you're not allowed to defeat encryption to do certain things like ripping DVDs. So you can rip a CD and that's fine because it's not encrypted, but you can't rip a DVD because that's encrypted. You can make a backup copy, but you're not allowed to defeat the encryption to do it. So there's funny little bits in our laws, and I'm not quite sure how they apply.
We're in the grey area here, aren't we?
Not quite sure how they apply to services.
Not black, it's not white.
To things like geo-blocking. But you get some really stupid effects of geo-blocking. I encountered one the other day, which is not in the realm of television or anything like that. It's in the realm of books on Amazon for my Kindle. I was reading a book that was part one of a three-part series by a very well-known science fiction author. One of my favourite authors.
Douglas Adams.
No, another one. And I'd bought, downloaded, and read book one. And I suddenly got to the end of book one. And I thought, oh, I need book two. And I discovered that it wasn't available. And then after some research, I Googled it and got linked to a page that's obviously for Americans on Amazon that said that they could buy it. So, and then by changing my address to an American address, I could buy the book and it would download it to my Kindle.
In Australia?
In Australia, by pretending I was in the US.
So you circumvented geo-blocking.
I did. I circumvented geo-blocking of a stupid, stupid kind. I would have quite happily paid for that content. I mean, why would book three was available in Australia as well. So why would book one and three of a series be available in Australia and book two just not? It's just crazy.
It sounds to me like a flag somewhere or a checkbox that someone hasn't clicked. And it's just a stupid oversight. That doesn't make any sense commercially.
It doesn't make any sense. I can tell you my guess as to what's probably happened, and I could be completely wrong. I reckon that the publisher who publishes for the UK and Australia, who has the rights in those countries for these books, but not in the US, it's a different publisher in the US, that the publisher for the UK and Australia has looked at this issue of ebooks and said, A, I don't care about ebooks because I don't understand them, and let's get the work experience kid to do it because he understands the internet. and that's how they've worked out what books are available and what ones aren't.
I reckon
that's probably what's happened.
All right. Just before we go to the Oddspot Gadget app and website of the week, I just thought I'd throw a bit of Telstra 4G stats at you. Telstra's 4G network has experienced solid growth with an estimated 800,000 customers evenly split between 4G handsets and dongles, the new iPhones and the gadgets that we all have in our telecommunications gadgets we have in our pockets, and the Wi-Fi hotspots. Customer satisfaction for 4G is very high. Why wouldn't it be when you think about the speeds that you're getting? And when you get speeds, it's good, isn't it? And moving all the customers to 4G, or all the new customers to 4G, has actually opened up the headroom in the 3G network as well. So
that's good.
If you're in 3G land still, chances are you might notice things are performing a little bit better.
A little bit better, maybe.
Anyway, also to back that up, the Chief Executive Officer, David Thodey, told investors, which is not new news, he's been saying this for a while, that the company plans to spend around $1.2 billion on 4G in the calendar year 2013, the goal of converting 66% of the population by the middle of the year. So if you don't have 4G in your backyard just yet, give it 6 months, chances are.
David Thodey's got you on his radar.
That'd be good. And the difference between 4G of different telephone companies is obviously the speed that you get due to the congestion on the network. The more people there are on a network, the less speed you get to your individual device. So don't buy an oversold network. Don't buy an undersold network. Make sure you get the network that works for you. If you're in the regional areas, have a look around. See what everyone else is using. Ask your neighbours, what are you using? Don't be guided by the suit-dressed salespersons at the local shop. Do your own research, and your chances are you'll find... Ask your neighbour too, because if they have a particular brand of or particular flavour of mobile broadband, then chances are you'll be able to get it as well. And check your handset. What handset have you got? One that's compatible or not? All these questions. Questions.
Lots of questions.
It's exciting times, though, isn't it?
So that announcement that you had there about the... Was that the 66% announcement that you were reading?
Yes.
Yeah. I noticed that they announced that last week, and I had a touch of the deja vus because they announced the same thing about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, it's regurgitated stuff.
And I'm thinking, are they going to announce this same same thing every 2 weeks from now till Christmas?
Yeah, they wait for a quiet spot in the news, and they just, lob it in.
Let's re-announce it and hope people didn't notice that we announced it 2 weeks ago.
Anyway, chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you want. Get your laptops out, get your notes and pens and papers ready. You might get some Christmas ideas. The Oddspot Gadget app and website of the week coming up after this.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra is the only carrier that can do location-based early warning.
Yes, make a sweeping generalisation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, please tell me they printed the CCV as well.
Yeah.
The tile change to offer you updates at a glance.
You sound like a climate change skeptic. What did you think I was going to say?
Who knows?
Time is an illusion.
Lunchtime, doubly so.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget, Andrew. Thanks to Marky Mark for the suggestion this week. Tags for Droid. Tags for Droid. These are third-party NFC keychains. Near-field communication keychains, which make it easy to automate tasks on your mobile phone. No more fumbling through multiple menus to do routine things like enabling GPS or turning off Bluetooth. With one touch, an NFC tag can turn down the volume, disable vibrate mode, set the brightness, deactivate Bluetooth, turn off GPS, set the alarm and enable the desktop clock all automatically.
Is this a product endorsed by police departments around Australia?
I'm not sure. Mark says, I use one of these at home, at work and in the car. So when I arrive home and tap my phone, it automatically turns on the Wi-Fi, turns off the ringers. Similarly, I tap it again and it turns off Wi-Fi and puts the ringer on loud. In the car, I tap it to enable or disable driving mode. I've got one at work, on my desk, which I just tap when I'm about to leave work. It automatically sends a message to Marky's wife to let her know when I've just left work. That's clever. You'll need a phone with NFC and you'll need to download NFC Task Launcher. But there are plenty of good YouTube videos showing the interesting ways how people have used these little gadgets. So I bought a pack of 20 and they arrived within 2 weeks. Cheerio from Marky Mark.
They're not expensive either. I had a look at these. They look great. They don't do one thing that I really want them to do.
What's that?
They will turn on or off Bluetooth, and it's the applications that are a limitation, not the tags.
Not the actual tags, yeah.
But none of the applications will connect to a specific Bluetooth device. So what I want to do is to be able to tap it in the car and connect to my car's Bluetooth audio and my car's Bluetooth phone. And none of them will connect to a specific device. Anyway, move on.
That's the gadget, Andrew.
That's my complaint.
For more information, go to tagsfordroid.com. That's our gadget, Tags for Droid.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
www.radioreference.com. This is a radio streaming site that I was using last week to monitor emergency service radio traffic from New York at the height of Hurricane Sandy.
When the wind blew, yes. Dr. Ron was on the scanner.
I was. If you're a shortwave listener or a radio ham, or if you're just plain radio curious, check out this website. You can simply click on over any of 3,000 live audio feeds to hear radio traffic from anywhere in the world. There's police, fire, ambulance channels, amateur radio, public transport feeds, aircraft, military, local government. You name it, it's there. Fun for the whole family.
I absolutely love it.
It's a great use of technology. That's our website, Andrew, radioreference.com. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Thanks, Primal, for this week's suggestion, Emergency Oz.
This is a real theme tonight.
It is, by a company called Gridstone. With the upcoming fire season, this might be just the app you're looking for to help you with advanced warning of nearby emergencies or natural disasters. Emergency Oz combines public information from police, fire and ambulance media feeds, as well as the Bureau of Meteorology, State Emergency Services, Department of Sustainability and Environment, and so on and so on. What you do is you select your state when you install the application, and you can then view an events list to see what's happening where and the distance from you that the event's actually happening. Available for both Android and iGadgets.
Okay, so this does all events?
Does everything. It does, for example, fires, car accidents, if people can smell smoke or something like that, and the emergency services are responding.
Traditionally, there was, like, I know the CFA, the Country Fire Authority here in Victoria, they have an app of their own stuff, so you can see what's going on in the flames and smoke and all those sort of things in areas. But this does them all, does it?
This combines all of the public feeds.
Ah, excellent.
Very good UI, very slick user interface. So check it out. It's by a company called Gridstone. That's our application.
And that's for iPhone or for?
For both. For iPhone, iGadgets, and for Android.
Fantastic.
Emergency Oz.
No Phone 8.
What?
Yeah, no. Exactly.
Yeah, move on.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
This is a variation on the message in a bottle story. You were talking earlier about, or bemoaning earlier, the state of broadband and getting stuff from A to B in this country, Andrew.
Fast. You can get it from A to B. It just takes a while.
In this case, it's a red capsule containing a coded note attached to an old pigeon bone dating back to World War II.
Is this what was found in the chimney in the UK?
I heard about this.
Go on.
During the war, there were squadrons of unpaid couriers, 250,000 pigeons flying messages strapped in little canisters to their legs across enemy lines or carried in bombers to be released in case of a crash.
These days, they carry USB sticks.
It appears, however,
after the internet,
one ended up in the chimney of a house in Surrey, now owned by a man called David Martin, and he only discovered this when he went to clean the chimney out. David Martin said about three handfuls of rubbish...
Look, dear, it's a dead pigeon.
Yes, down came the leg of the dead pigeon with the red capsule still attached with a message inside. David Martin
what
said
did
you
it
had
say?
To unscrew Run? It on a piece of paper, cigarette paper thin, and there was a secret message.
What did it say?
We don't know, it's secret.
Oh.
There's a name, Sergeant W. Stott. The message is in code. Code breakers at Bletchley Park can't make any sense of the code, but they have not given up trying. If they can crack it...
Maybe it was a rogue pigeon.
The message might be a bit dated. The author may have gone the way of the good way of the pigeon, but there's hope that the leg and the canister may at least shed light on a fragment of wartime history. That's our Odd Spot, Andrew.
And that is the show for this week. Thank you, linesman. Thank you, ball boys. Lena will be back next week with a game segment. Until then,
Four to go.
Don't forget to sign up for the event at
five left. I think I was reading
the website. The event website.
The event website is techtalkradio.eventzilla.net.
And go to mobro.co/gcttr to support Movember.
All that and more. Till next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget you can follow the panellists on Twitter. Join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.